this is kind of week two of visuals, and maybe we'll just start off by introducing our guest, Darcy Norman. So Darcy's got a photo loaded on his laptop. No, it's okay. I was even going to jump up to do it. But just to kind of frame things, this is a picture taken about a year after Alan, Darcy, and I first met each other in person. Alan and Darcy collectively are actually really significant friends in terms of my professional development and in terms of my understanding of the web. Because we were all doing kind of similar work in very different places. So Alan was based at what was called Maricopa in the metropolitan Phoenix area. Darcy was at the University of Calgary, and I was at the University of British Columbia. We were all doing this work that was quite esoteric, that we really didn't have peers at our own institution that did what we did. And the other things that we kind of shared was we were relatively low in the pecking order, since we didn't direct the way the projects went. We were kind of doing what we thought we were supposed to do, but we were all kind of haunted that the way things were supposed to be done was wrong. And we had this sense there might be a better way. So we were involved in these very official repository media type projects that were designed to help people share. And the thing that we were all running up against is we couldn't get anyone to actually use these tools because they were really complicated and unwieldy. And at the same time, all three of us were fooling around with what was this brand new kind of wacky technology called blogs. And you couldn't really, you guys jump in and tell me if I'm wrong, but back then my recollection was you couldn't get anyone in higher education to think about using blogs as a technology for doing stuff. It was seen as just kind of a goofy...
Diaries.
Yeah, it was like cat diaries was a phrase.
And I don't have a cat, so
what do we mean?
What year was that, Frank?
This would be 2002 to 2004 was kind of when we were getting to know each other.
Because it wasn't academic writing,
yeah.
Universities, higher education, that's unimportant.
And IT departments didn't support them.
Limited the space.
So,
right.
So there were people that would create web pages. But
there were people who had to hand-code HTML for my course page and have the animated GIF or whatever, and they had the nasty, sparkle background with text drop shadows. So there was that kind of stuff. And then there was academic writing, but there was nothing in the middle. And that's kind of what we were dabbling around with.
So the ironic thing is this idea of learning object repositories was supposed to support people sharing resources and then also creating a mechanism to communicate within communities of practice. And there were actually, back then, it was actually large, in Canada at least, quite significant amounts of federal funding was made available for it. So my first job was funded with matching funds from the federal government. I know Darcy's job probably was too. We were relatively entry-level people on our respective projects. So there was a lot of money being spent on this stuff, but it felt really absurd. So we kind of bonded on that absurdity. And the thing that was kind of weird was we were playing with this technology called blogs, and we're getting to know each other through our blogs, and we're thinking, well, wait a second, if I'm going to share something with people, I just posted on my blog, and these guys have it instantly. And if I want to ask them a question or communicate with them, we do it through our blogs, and we reflect, and we read each other, and we offer commentary. It's like, isn't this what we are supposed to be doing with these big expensive projects? But we're doing this for free. And so we were starting to kind of have this thing where we were realizing that when we were supposedly fooling around, that we were actually doing a better job of doing the work we were supposed to do. So that photo that was showing up earlier there was, we kind of had the wacky idea of actually proposing that at one of these conferences, one of these good, serious educational technology conferences. We said, well, why not just use weblogs and RSS and create communities that way? As far as I know, we were the first people to propose that idea in higher education. There probably were others, but we didn't know about them.
What was the reception at that time?
Well, it was interesting. They gave us two separate conferences that were both held in Vancouver. One was the Merlot Conference and the other was the New Media Consortium Conference. They gave us the absolute worst spot. So they accepted us. But what was amazing was both of them had overflow crowds. So that's when we started to realize we had something. And speaking on a personal level, too, it was really powerful for me because, like I said, I only knew these guys remotely. So we got to know each other through our blogs and instant message, and we put together virtual presentations remotely. We got to know each other over a period of about 6 months. The first time the three of us met face-to-face was a few hours before our first conference presentation together. And one of the things that was wild about that was we all immediately went for a beer. I don't think we had to decide that. We knew that about each other. And we went had a beer before our session, and I remember it was a really powerful moment for me, because this was the early, relatively early days, at least for me, in terms of online interaction. There's a lot of talk about how online identities are false constructs, and how inauthentic it was, and how it undermined human connection.
And strangers on the internet.
So yeah, there's a lot of fear in the discourse. And what I found was surprising, I was sitting with these two guys, and we're talking, and I realized this is the first time I've met them. But the dynamic of sitting with them was more like meeting old friends that you hadn't seen in years. There were definitely gaps that we didn't know about each other in terms of our personality, but there was so much more. What I really had a sense of these people, and what I remember being so powerful was, there really weren't any surprises. And it was around that time where I had this very high-end server that cost a lot of money, sitting on a UBC server farm that was supposed to hold a media repository, and nobody was using it. And Darcy was helping to be an administrator for it. And Darcy, we were in some messaging back and forth, and I think I was just venting about how, you know, there was, how absurd the project was. And Darcy said, "Well, if you want, I could throw a movable type, which was a web logging software, and use MonWiki on your server if you like, and you can start playing around with it."
But the funny thing is, I wrote the repository software that was on the server that nobody was using.
Yeah.
And what I was talking is, why didn't you use the box for something interesting? Yeah. We stuck this on something we didn't write that was freely available. So.
And not to brag, but as far as I know, that was the first instance I opened it up to the university and it took off. And it was, as far as I know, the first university wiki that was ever installed at any university anywhere. And it was the second university to offer web blogging. University of Minnesota got in the house. But what was powerful about that too was seeing that it was actually the first time I had an experience where when we would show software, people actually wanted to use it. Which may or may not apply to some of you, because I know that some of you are finding the experience working with WordPress to be, you know, not completely easy. But believe it or not, it could have been worse. So anyway, it's a trip down memory lane. I'm not exactly sure what purpose, other than maybe to just say it's a very cool and powerful experience for me to have both Alan and Darcy here with me now. They continue to be really good friends of mine and great collaborators, and Darcy does amazing stuff at Calgary and beyond. And so it's brilliant to have him here this week. One of the other reasons we brought him in is at the University of Calgary, he's kind of led the process they had for choosing the learning management system they chose and leading the migration and a lot of the community relations. So we brought him in to give a talk tomorrow just across the hall at 9:30, and also just to meet with our various stakeholders around the learning management system and tap his brain. And as Darcy knows, I'll be continuing to bother him in the weeks and months ahead as we go.
Well, some career advice: if you're ever given the choice, don't be involved with leading an LMS implementation.
which honestly, I agree with, and obviously that demonstrates that yes, there was no choice involved.
Darcy, is your talk tomorrow about Moodle?
Yeah, so I'm not going to be here saying yep, it's not about the technology itself. What I'm going to talk about is, so what do we do during the selection process to make it not about technology, but crafting a way of teaching and learning, and how that kind of changed how the community...
Is it all right to drop by?
It's an open meeting. Yeah. That's why I'm mentioning it.
Thank you.
I mean, we've sent out email invites to people who have participated in the process in one great way or another so far, but you know, one of the things that is a bit frustrating here is we don't really have a way to really broadly announce events, particularly without a lot of notice that get to everybody. It's just one of the quirks of our institution. So if you don't get an invitation, you shouldn't presume that you're not invited. And if you're interested in something, by all means, I'm not putting on. Chances are it's open. And if it isn't, drop me a line. Anyway. So that's a bit of a long-winded intro to Darcy. Hopefully, at the very least, communicates he's an awesome dude. And I'm really happy to have him there. Alan, I'm going to maybe toss to you now, just to maybe, we'll just do a little check-in in terms of where we're at in our process, and then we're going to talk a little bit about what we're going to do today, which we hope will be a relatively relaxed Monday, because I think it's going to crank out a bit after
this. Dun-dun-dun. And just now, like literally like right before the meeting, is the stuff for this week, which is Brian said, it's kind of continuing working with images, but this time, instead of photographs, in addition to talking about manipulating and creating your own graphics. So it will probably involve using some software, and so you may or may not have things like Photoshop. You don't need Photoshop. If you have Photoshop, use it. If you don't, we have a new part of the site that has a collection that we hope will grow. There's open source alternatives, and there's actually some really great things that operate in the web browser that are free and let you do the most of the things that you will want to do in Photoshop. And the key thing with Photoshop, and unlike a lot of people, especially if they have Windows, will go, oh, I have Windows Paint. And the thing about Windows Paint, you can do stuff, but it looks like everything is just like squatted together. And you can't really, once you put something on top of something, you can't edit it anymore. So the thing you want in editing software is to work in layers, which means that I can take a picture of this room, I can take a picture of John, and I can impose maybe a little unicorn jumping over his head. And so I can edit John without messing up my total image of the unicorn. So we'll get more of that in terms of when we edit. And so some of the things we're suggesting you try this week are some of the kind of fun assignments, but it's do like your own meme post, so like an internet meme thing that usually has a cat and some stupid message. We'll do something that represents you or the work that you're going on. And so we'll throw out some of those examples. The part that I know is hard, and I've really been rethinking this idea about how you do a portfolio in WordPress. I think the worst thing you can do is sit down and say, I want to do a portfolio in WordPress, because you're trying to figure out how do I make it look like an acolyte portfolio. And so we're going to ask you to do some trusting with us and say, what you have now, which might just be a series of reflections and blog posts, and then you're going to start posting some of these images and sound files that you're going to create. You're going to be making these artifacts that are just going to be hanging out there in blog posts. There are ways to re-jig, especially in WordPress, the site, so that stuff is not on the front page. So you can design sort of a nice welcome thing that has maybe the artifacts that you select and would look more like a portfolio. So we're just trying to say, if you're trying to say, this doesn't really look like a portfolio, and this doesn't look like portfolio software, is that you're going to morph it into one. And so my metaphor now is, a lot of times the way portfolio software works, not to slam them all, it's like a manufactured home. And basically, you get the layout that the manufacturer provides, and you slap a couple pictures on the wall and paint the bathroom pink, but you're stuck with their design. And so we're giving you an empty lot and a pile of lumber and a few weak instructions, but we're going to help you build your own house.
So yeah, essentially when you're putting in reflections or capturing a piece of work you've done that you're proud of or whatever it is, you are, even though it may look like you're just building a set of sequential blog posts, you actually are building the raw components that towards the end you'll be pleasantly surprised are not that difficult to shape into something that looks more like a traditional portfolio.
Just to reaffirm, and I think I know enough about WordPress that I know the answer to this, but I'll ask anyhow. In the WordPress TRU sandbox space that most of us are blogging in, it's kind of like a playground, right? So we're playing with the building materials. And if I understand WordPress correctly, you can export out of that WordPress into another WordPress. So don't get hung up on what it looks like now. Like, don't be afraid to leave tools lying around and that kind of thing.
You can fill the WordPress installs. You could, if you decide you don't want to go with a full-fledged website and you just really like the idea of just being able to post and share stuff, maybe something like Tumblr is more to your interest. So that's a simpler platform. It's less flexible, but if all you want to do is be able to write something and share it, you don't really care about structure. But again, yes, to answer your question, you can always, one of the reasons why WordPress is a good place to start is you can always get your stuff out. It doesn't lock you in.
So I kind of got hung up on aesthetics, right? Yeah. Right out of the gate.
A lot of people do.
And then I kind of read it out, so I just wanted to reaffirm that, I do have that right.
And also to be clear, what you write is completely separate from the way it looks.
Right.
We're going to do some more telling you about different themes and then you swap themes so you don't lose any content.
So you selected what the difference between pages and posts?
We've done a little bit of that in drop-ins. So in sessions like this, not so much. We did a little bit in the very first week. I just want to say too, that actually a lot of the people coming to the drop-ins, Our first couple of weeks, particularly with people that were new to these types of sites, we put our emphasis on how to post, how to organize, how to work within the posting interface. Received great progress on that. So my expectation is as people continue to come to the drop-ins, our emphasis will shift into things like getting your theme the way you like it and tweaking your themes and the more aesthetic pieces of it. Because, yeah, now people are able to post. And I have to say, I want to thank everyone. It's a challenge because some people here are very advanced. Like Colin is, I don't know how Colin's doing half of what he's doing. And like, I mean that sincerely. Like he's further along than I am. But at the same time, there are people here that are still trying, you know, and to figure out how to shape a post and publish it. And that's not a judgment call. That's just where people are at.
And it's also important though that this isn't like this is like a sprint that we're putting together. And we had time to learn over our own pace of months to get sort of these mechanics.
You had the same experience as you just had years ago.
Yeah. So think of it as just trying to you're getting in shape and you're working on your technique. And then you'll be able to continue and refine what you do.
But I mean, I'm going to point to the different levels because obviously we have the drop-in. Although this week we're going to have Darcy too, and Teishu, who I don't think I introduced you to last week. She's a co-op student that just started with me last week. And I probably didn't introduce her last week because I didn't want to throw her into the fire too quickly. But one of the things I found very quickly is she's extremely helpful and very capable. And so actually she was great at last week's drop-ins. So this week we'll have four people on hand that are able to help sit beside you. So this is where you have to,
we did schedule them. What was it? We did
the same as last week, Thursday afternoon,
Friday
morning, 10
a.m. So the drop-in should be great this week in terms of being able to help people out. And then just other things to remember too is if you feel like the drop-ins just isn't your ring for whatever reason, make an appointment with us. We'll try to help you out. We're seeing it's in progress. It seems to be kind of unevenly distributed. Like we've seen some really amazing stuff. Maybe I'm going to share a couple. And I actually had a lot of people that are here. Some of my favorite posts and pages.
Yeah, I rejigged a little bit of the site to the posts that appear at the bottom. We call it the highlight reel. So as I've been reading, we kind of mark them off in the site so they can sort of be featured. And so if as we develop more posts, it's harder to keep up with that. So if you come across someone else's post and you say, this should be in the highlight reel, let me know. But, I know Tim's been doing some great stuff. He did this video that he produced before, where it's just very elegantly done, but he's having a conversation with himself on a bench, and he's your hockey fans from two different years. And it really shows, the video looks kind of simple, but there's probably a lot of complexity in producing it, but I can tell by looking at it that he's got these really good chops for editing and just thinking about the videos. He's got multiple camera angles, and the view doesn't stay on him, just fits from one viewpoint. It's got this kind of quick pace. And so we'll get into some of those techniques, and we'll be relying on Tim as we get into the video things. So don't run away. There's a couple more. Gail's been producing a lot, and she really took on using the photos as we demonstrated last week. And overall, I'm seeing a lot more photos in your posts, which just makes me happy. Because then your things don't come up with just a camera on the site, but also we're hoping that you start to understand about how to communicate. I urge you to check them out. And, obviously, they should all be featured because. And there's some people just doing some really good writing, and I'm surprised that people aren't just trying to stay in an academic mindset. People are sharing kind of personal, not deeply personal, but kind of things that happened during their week that says, this was kind of interesting. And so some of it's conversations with their spouses or partners. John sort of shares his experience in running things at the Film Society. And so some of it is about the thing that happened, but also like the meta level about why he thinks it's significant and sort of what he's learning from that experience.
One thing I love you too is I'm getting to know my coworkers on a whole other different level. So the lab posted this awesome post with these very funny animated GIFs, but they were very revealing of your little
videos.
Awesome. And you guys call your space the Tin Can. And Brianna's written even integrate Safari at a little more than you can. So, you know, I walk through the office space and I see the vibe that they have, but I feel like through the posts they've been writing, even though they're quite whimsical, I'm getting this insight into what's actually kind of going on in that corner of the center. And these are my coworkers, so that's where I'm starting to see kind of that kind of cultural richness of the space is imbibing. And I encourage you to look at their posts because they're having fun with it. So this isn't a burden. It doesn't look like a burden. It doesn't read like a burden. Also, we said that. And yet it's very illuminating and enriching. So there's so many different ways to approach it. As I said, Colin's portfolio is just incredible. We will be showing this as a showpiece for all sorts of things. The thought he's put in structuring it. I don't think very many of us are going to get to that level. I know I won't. And then yes, seeing other people coming up and running. I love seeing that Chalet, and she's, you know, she writes these, her post titles are so hilarious too. And she keeps running herself down, but she just also keeps pumping stuff out too. So anyway, I hope this process isn't feeling too painful for people, and people are getting a sense of progress. If you're feeling specific hangups that we're not addressing, that's when you gotta talk to us, because we're doing our best to kind of to maintain it. And this is so new to me in the sense of just being able to track where everybody's at, and I don't have a completely clear sense where everyone's at. And unfortunately, I don't get to dedicate 100% of my time to this, but I think I would need to. And unfortunately, I'm in a position of spending 1 or 2 hours a day on it at most. So,
but get rid of that illness thing.
Yeah, I know, exactly. If I could actually focus on my real work, because to me, this actually does feel way more important and interesting. So, but anyway, so maybe that's enough rambling for now. Maybe we should just move on to today's activity. Is there one of your guys that should let people talk? Does anyone have comments or questions at this point that they want to share, or reflections? Or?
Can we get a note for you to spend more time on this?
I don't have any power in this place, but in terms of spending more time, I would happily help try to craft a rationale with some of the skills that hopefully participating in this might build and why it is relevant to your professional profile, if that would be helpful. If you've gotten any flack from your supervisor, have them call me. I won't argue with them. I'll just try to explain to them what value I see.
I'd say the more you have to show, the more you can say, look at what this is happening here. So
that's publish something.
No pressure.
Some of you are taking it in a more whimsical direction. Actually, that has gone quite a far ways. Her site is actually quite well along in terms of the portfolio as well, so it's not just being wacky by any means. But, you know, if you need help framing that, like why having a sense of play in these early posts is what you need to do to build, it doesn't look professional enough. I'm not gonna fight anybody, but I'm perfectly willing to have conversations with anyone that gives you any.
And down the line, I mean, you decide you don't want that one in your portfolio. You go in and you don't delete things in your blog. You just go in and mark it as a draft, and so it doesn't appear in the public site, but it stays
on the homepage.
Yeah, it stays inside your editing interface. So a lot of people they tend to like throw away their blogs.
But don't discount the sort of promotion reputation side of it. So, I mean, none of us started blogging to, hey, let's have an international profile. And we just blogged because we were documenting stuff, using as like a shared billboard brain, let's document stuff and sort of share and build from there. What a happy accident was, I mean, the story is probably the same for all three of us. Outside of our institutions, we had much higher reputation because people have seen it and they've heard it. Oh, you're Darcy, you're Brian, oh my God. On our own campuses, specifically, nobody knew me on my campus. Darcy who? Until just recently the LMS thing, because they had to go through that. But just realizing that building these connections, even although it's not like LinkedIn, you're not trying to generate revenue from it, but that is a side effect of as you do this and people see what you're doing and they're interested in it, commenting, linking, and building on what you're doing, it's a very cool thing to see what kind of comes from that. And that we are where we are because that's there. And that's kind of a cool thing. So I don't want to discount that.
There's
side.
Kind of two sides of that. I mean, one is the kind of naked benefit, and we probably benefited because we were relatively early. I sometimes have said it was a bit like buying a stock when it was very low. And, you know, so it resulted in speaking gigs and opportunities with other organizations and things. And I think that's harder to create things now because the space is more crowded. But the piece that is absolutely still valid and is way more important to me now is you find people that are similar to you in other places. And then you realize you have, like I said, the thing that connected the three of us is nobody at our own institutions had jobs like ours. workshops. So we were able to kind of commiserate, share tips, share resources. Here's a workshop I did. And what you'll find is there are, even if you're the only person that does what you do where you are, there's definitely people who do similar things that can complement but can amplify what you do elsewhere. And blogging is such a powerful way to connect and collaborate with them. And that's been an ongoing value for me.
Just by way of encouraging you guys, that everything that has happened so far has been absolutely totally applicable to the work that I've done. The fact that you've got a course that I've been hoping to get launched in the next couple weeks.
Wow, fantastic. Well, if you bring the bears and some of your posting, that is going to be good.
No pressure.
I mean that in a sense of pressure, but I'm looking at what you're doing, it's really good. That's what you're moving towards. I can only see what you do.
One of the things I do with my team back home is they're so much in the trenches, they're supporting this stuff. Oh my god, we don't have time to play with stuff. And so I'm trying to force them, force as much as you can. I need to take it at least a day a week and play, whether it's blogging, playing with photography, making stuff. They need to be doing that because the university is looking at them to be the leaders in the innovation on stuff. They can't do their jobs unless they have time to play and discover. That's extremely important. I don't know what all your roles are, but I know several of your roles where it's that is your job, is to play and discover what you can do with this stuff. And not just, well, I saw a presentation on this thing, and it looks like blogging. No, you need to own this stuff. You need to know what it is. And the only thing they do is roll up sleeves and jump in. So,
I think that's not fun.
Blah, 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 blah.
Any other thoughts or comments, questions?
It might be part of what you plan as part of the seminar, but I think one of the things I find helpful and useful is if people that are blogging, maybe further down the road, when, you know, there's been more trial and error happening, is to maybe present to the group some of the decisions that they've made around aesthetics and functionality and that kind of thing. And, you know, speaking for myself, I haven't had a lot of time to play with it, but and I know I'm the kind of person that if I did, you know, fully immerse in it, I'd play with every bell and whistle on there. But then the decision making at that point, so maybe I guess what I'm asking for is shortcuts.
Would you like to have a few of you people share what you're doing and share with the group?
And it doesn't have to be in great detail, but I just think, that especially around the decision making and the rationale behind it, it doesn't have to be fully immersed.
That's interesting. We got to look into that. My expectation is even though we're shifting into audio and video in the next 4 weeks, we're going to still open every session with something like this where we check in and catch up. Get where we're at and ground. And again, you know, we can always readjust if some of you say, you know, maybe some of us shouldn't be doing video, we really want to focus on this. We're not gonna force anything. More than anything, the reason we do the regular seminars is to create space in your week where you get to come and actually dig into it and create dedicated time and space and prompts to help move you to where you want to go. This isn't about us getting you to some place where we want you to be. It's about us trying to provide space and activities and support to help you get where you want to go. So we're always ready to adjust. We put together a schedule because we sat down at the beginning as what are some of the things that might be fun to cover. But we didn't know who would show up. We didn't know what people wanted to do. So keep that in mind. Nothing is set in stone. Keep lying.
Why don't I? So you wanted me to come and talk about photography, about how what's it like to take a bunch of pictures and whatnot. And my initial reaction is, who the heck am I talking about photography? I'm not a photographer, I'm an educational technologist. I use my camera for 99% of the pictures that I take. My phone for 99% of the pictures I take. But there's an interesting maybe parallel with what you guys are doing here. So I have been doing a photo a day project for, I don't know, almost a decade, for many years. And I post them online, so I actually have a visual record of photographs, one every single day for the last, I think, 8 years now. It's a long time. Anyways, But I can sort of show, so I've got right now, they're all actually on my blog, on my website, so I can show sort of visually how they're in there. I can maybe talk about some sample photographs. I don't know, what direction you want to take them. Like, show some samples, and then the idea was we'd end with a photo op, right?
I'd love to hear a little bit about your workflow. If you're taking photos on your phone and then You know, are you organizing them on your computer using Aperture, iPhoto, or Dropbox, or just, you know?
Well, I started off very kind of hardcore. Because I was doing the photo a day thing, I had my DSLR and a big, heavy camera with the lenses, and I was all about, let's bring them into Aperture, it's the kind of software I use, and let's tweak it, let's get the levels right, and let's make sure it's sharp. And did that for years, it was awesome, and now, literally, I take it with my phone, I push a button in WordPress, and it's up on my site. Like, I'm terrible. See if the Wi-Fi works. So, usually I use a camera app, I don't do it right from WordPress, but I'll... Sorry, wave? There we go, so I got a picture. Any questions?
I'll just see it.
Is there an app for WordPress?
Yeah, there's a WordPress app, it's really good. And so you feed it the URL, the address for your blog, you log in, and...
It's not great for offering long comments, but it's fine for posting a photo. It's the thing I like it best for is managing comments. If that starts to become an issue, you start getting feedback. Because the problem is people want to have moderated comments, they don't want to go straight to the site because of spam or whatever reason. So it's just very easy to get a notification. You've got a comment, you've got one button, and then post to the site.
With this, I've got the WordPress app, but you probably can't see. But imagine if you can see, there's at the bottom there a little new post button that brings up a thing. So I just give it a title. Blogging at TRU. I'm going to select a photo, the last one I took. And right now it's uploading the photo to my site instead of Flickr or other places.
Is there something you need to do with your photos on the phone to, like when it shows up on the computer, I find a lot of my photos and I'm wondering if it has to do with the size of the actual photo when you actually show it on the computer screen. It's very pixelated, it doesn't look the way
it can be. Yeah, I can show, so I'm just going to publish, I'll come up here and show it. Yeah, I can maybe show some of that because... When I'm serious about a photo, yeah, I'll take it in Aperture and do a thing. But if I'm documenting, I'm at an event or whatever, or I'm walking around, that's literally the workflow that I use.
What you're describing too is if you have a photo, a thumbnail version ends up being what gets published on the full site website.
Oh, it could be, yeah.
When you say pixelated, like you get the impression it's a small image that's being blown up too high.
Is it just when you look at it on the computer or when you see it on the blog?
Well, anytime on the computer or the blog, if I'm uploading it doesn't look the same. It looks blurry. You can see it's very pixelated. So
what are you using to upload?
That's what I'm wondering. If there's something I just don't know.
Yeah, it could be using the WordPress app or something else.
Yes.
Okay, there is a setting, and then we can take a look at the setting. But you can say what size do you? Is it just a thumbnail, or is it just like sometimes it's a 320, a small version of it? And for mine, I've told it when you upload to my site. So this is actually the photo page. I told the WordPress app, actually I told my blog, make sure the photos are 960 pixels, so they'd be the full width of the page. And so that's the image I just took. And if I click on that, it's actually now a post on my blog, blogging at TRU, as the Wi-Fi's kick in. And that's the image that was uploaded, full 960 pixels across. It was actually longer. So it's a little blurry because I wasn't taking very much time to take the shot. But that's my workflow. When I'm doing something more serious, yeah, she knew what was going on. I use Aperture. So this is what it's like a photo management tweaking application. I just took a subset of my stuff. I've got 200 gigs of photos at home. But I can do something like here's a photo I took skiing with my son. And I'll actually, you can go in here, you can actually really tweak adjustments really nice. So you can, if you really want, you can take it in here, you can do the thing. But then the cool thing, I use a program on the Mac called Mars Edit, and it's basically like the WordPress app. I drag the photo in that, and it takes care of resizing and posting and all that. So there are all kinds of workflows. I'm not going to say, here's the workflow you need to use, because it's going to be different for everybody. But that site, I mean, I've got a photos page on my site, and this has everything that's in a category. I've got a category called ephemera. Stuff that may or may not last, and it just shows thumbnails for anything in that. Any media that's attached to a post on my site gets, I think it's the most recent 500 or so of these things. And I don't have to worry about, well, am I going to add it to the list of things? No, it's a blog post. WordPress takes care of this. I use a plugin to do this called YP Latest Post, I think it's called, and it just builds this page based on stuff in a category. Works really well. One of, I guess, sort of dovetailing to photography, why photography? So on this page, there are pictures taken with, so there's one from my iPhone.
Here's one from a Canon camcorder. We've got a G30. You probably know the Canon G30. So I'm like, there are way better photographers in the room, people with better gear. But play with the camera you've got. So this iPhone, this is a camcorder. Actually, this is a really kind of amazing shot. This blew me away. This is sunrise from our office window on campus. This is something like 10 kilometers away, through a dirty window, blah, blah, blah. But the camcorder actually has really nice optics. So play with the cameras you have. And it may not always be a camera you think you want to use. Then there's things like, here's one from a GoPro camera. I've been shooting with that a whole lot. Again, we're doing some ski stuff. You don't really want to drag your DSLR around. This is a still from an HD video taken with a GoPro. What I've learned is just whatever you're using to take pictures, think of it as a camera, not a phone or a video camera or whatever else. And sort of think, it's weird, this whole photo a day thing. I feel like I'm rambling here, so. The photo a day thing really forced me to think differently about not just what I'm taking a picture of, but how I'm doing it. How am I composing it? And it really forces you, it trains you to see composition. You know, you learn about the rule of thirds, how you break things up. So you really train yourself about that. You learn the mechanics of the camera, and then it becomes automatic. You don't have to think about it. And then I find that I'm using that elsewhere. Even things like I'm playing Xbox games with my son. It's got a camera built into it, and so you can actually take stills. This was actually an Xbox still. Not a camera, and yet you're picking focal length, you're picking aperture, you're doing all that stuff in there with things that may or may not be traditional cameras. Yeah, so nice embarrassing dork shot of... yeah. but let's take a look at what that photo a day thing looks like. So on my site, I've got these... that photo page. I've also got this gallery, which is some custom PHP I wrote because I didn't want to have all my stuff staying on Flickr or other places that I couldn't control. And each one of these is basically a folder on my server. So I can just, from Aperture, say, make a website. I upload that website to a folder on my server, and it generates this automatically. So I've got a folder in here for 365 photos, and 2007 is when I started. So each one of these is a folder that has a website. So here is the 2014 year at a glance, so I can actually see all 365 photos. And some of them are really kind of boring. Yeah, grilling, whatever, that's not exciting. We did a bike ride across the Peace Bridge in Calgary. This was actually taken on a bike going about 25 kilometers an hour, so I have my phone while I'm riding, trying not to hit pedestrians. Sorry, yeah.
Did you say you can send a stream of Aperture to the WordPress, or no?
I use another app called Mars Edit. So you could also use the web editor, but yeah, I use another one, basically drag it into that, and it takes care of uploading. There are extra plugins you can get for Aperture, but they really got flaky. Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it, but it's something like Mars Editor.
The web editor works really well.
I do want to go through Aperture before.
But what I like about these, so I use Mars Edit. It wasn't cheap, it was like $40. But it's nice because it resizes. You don't have to do export as JPEG and upload that. No, this, you just drag the thing in and it does its thing and does that, so which is kind of nice. But what I've learned about this, so this is an entire year at a glance, and we've got everything from, you know, I did a lot of bike riding to work. Here's a pond by the university, so I could, you know, just sort of, I find this really triggers my memory. I can look at any one of these pictures and tell you exactly what was happening then. I can describe the sounds, the smells, and it's something I didn't have. I've got a crappy memory. I forget everything. But I can actually go through and describe every single one of these. Like, this was waiting for my... we just took over a room, and we repurposed it as an EdTech R&D lab. This was actually... It turned out to be a huge political battle, but taking this picture, this is when we kind of won, and we got to actually have the space back. And this was when our team basically put our flag in the sand to say, this is where we're going to... We own this room. We're going to do some research and development. Things like we got our antique kitchen table refinished. So I find this really as a memory prompt. Again, barbecuing. I'm a lot about barbecuing. another one on the Peace Bridge. We go there a lot. It's really, if you can get across it, that's awesome. Things like we traveled as our team. So this was actually the D2L implementation team. We went to the D2L conference in Nashville. And yeah, it's kind of cool. People on the team being goofy together and documenting that. Hanging out with people who may or may not be Judds, the near Judds. Yeah. there you go. The one photo of me without facial hair. Again, that's taking it from, I was going about 35K an hour on the bike. The other thing I learned, so with the photo a day thing, you have to have a camera with you all the time. And I started off and I had a crappy little Olympus, it was 2007, it was a long time ago, so it was a garbage camera, right? And the pictures we saw that came out of it were absolutely garbage. But because it was the camera I had, there's some still important pictures. But I can see as I evolved, I've gone through about 7 or 8 cameras. And not that they're fantastic cameras. What I really sort of developed as a photographer is when I started carrying around my DSLR all the time. Let me go back up here. So carrying this big, this big heavy camera around. Let me see if I can find, actually, there's one shot I want to see if I can just, Oh, it's not loading. Sorry, bear with me. Oh, of course, I'm not going to find it. All right, so carrying this DSLR on, I was shooting pictures every day, but it made me learn the mechanics. So you're learning about how you set the aperture and the ISO and all these kinds of things, but because you're using it all the time, that drops away, and you sort of just do it automatically. You also, I found I became sort of braver with it. I was carrying my DSLR in a pannier on my bike, so I'd have it all the time, or riding minus 20, whatever, and I'd be able to stop at a snowdrift, pull it out and take a picture, stuff it back in and go. And again, playing with different lenses, that kind of thing. But I got kind of maybe over brave, over crazy with it, and the photo I was trying to find, I was actually riding along, again, going kind of at speed commuting, wrapped the strap for my camera around my hand and just sort of held it down near the spokes. And thinking back, extremely crazy thing. If I hit a bump or something and went into the spokes, I would have been It was also with a very expensive lens. I was borrowing a $1,700 lens from work. Not a smart thing to do, but exploring and experimenting. And it was one of my favorite shots, and I can't find it, but it was a really cool shot. So experimenting with different perspectives, like who would think about, now you've got a GoPro. People have GoPros stuck on the front fork of their bike, that's just how they do it. Yeah, they don't always do it with a giant 5-pound camera strapped to your hand. Let's see if I can find that. Yeah, it's not gonna show it. Actually, some good cushions here. There's some guy. There we go. I don't know. So the whole idea is I try not to get too hung up with the camera itself. And again, I'm just using, like, I'm experimenting now with GoPros. I'm using this because it's crazy wide. So a lot of times you're using a regular phone camera or whatever, and you just can't get a picture of this. You can basically, whatever you can see, it's going to get it as a still. So playing with different things that may or may not be cameras.
We have, we purchased a couple of these for the Innovation Lab, so if you want to borrow a GoPro, that's
fine. These are cool. They're also wireless enabled, so you can stick it somewhere and then control it with your phone. So you can actually, if you're doing a time lapse or something, you can actually control the video and record pictures that way. But not traditionally. People don't think of it as a camera. This is a sports video camera. No, it's a 12-megapixel camera with a crazy wide lens that normally costs a fortune.
There have been some amazing documentaries shot completely on GoPro.
Yeah.
It's one that documents the shipping industry, the cameras in this unusual position. Something about that wide angle makes the presence different from traditional video coverage.
Something I think is still in the fairly early experimental phases, but using some GoPro network cameras to capture the experience of an open online distance student, what their work environment is like, and how interaction works. And we're going to use that at least for promotional purposes, but may well for quality control with experiential gathering as well. So, yeah, keep in mind that one of the reasons we purchased it was to make it a loan that we have. We have other gear too. We're going to talk more about that when we get into the audio and video components. But there's gear at the main media center, but we also have a little bit of video as well.
Which reminds me, I bought a fish lens camera it for like 10 bucks from eBay, and it's just like a clip, so you can just clip it onto the camera, and it's a fish lens, so it's really bright. Like, I could take the whole room in just one picture. It's really cool. Yeah, just remind me how to use it in years. Yeah, exactly. Same thing. It's cool.
So dealextreme.com, dx.com. $9, $10.
$9,
and these clips and these are actually really fun. They're crappy lenses, anybody cares, look for them. But they're fun, yeah. You can get really cool fisheye lenses, and there's distortion, and there's dark spots, but
right.
It's just neat,
because
you see things differently.
And then you get the, you know, when you take a pick of a scenery, you need the reach, and you can get that with the fish lens.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Well, we're thinking, the whole idea is let's try playing. So we were kind of bummed out that the light outside is crappy, so it may or may not be great for a photo walk. But one of the nice things with the flat light out there is really good for portraits. So we can maybe do a photo walk, and you can try taking pictures of each other. You can try playing with things that don't have shadows. I mean, there's still lots of neat stuff around this campus.
So in terms of time, we have a half hour left. I don't know if that's enough time to go outside and come back. Another thing you can do is I'm perfectly willing to watch your stuff if you like. You want to leave your stuff here. We probably got to lock the door too. If that didn't work, great, at least I'll watch your stuff. Another option is that if you do kind of wander off towards the activity and don't come back, please do upload some of the pictures you take to the TRA tracker. The one we used last
time. Category
for you please wait. And then I think there'll be some prompts when you guys walk around. Some things you might try to do in terms of taking some portraits of each other and probably talking about that.
Yeah, we thought maybe, I don't know if you have like a really good picture of yourself that you want to use, and maybe someone in the room can do that for you, but it's some good practice. Now, taking pictures of people is really challenging.
Yeah.
So,
I find that's the kind of picture I don't take with a lot of these people. And
yeah,
partly because I'm shy and it feels intrusive and invasive and all that. It's like, how do you get over that? I know people like Tom Woodward, who's got this project where he shoots. We've been a portrait a day for the longest time. And absolutely amazing is that Twitch can get over that and sort of build relationships with people and amazing to make pictures.
Well, and one of the things to keep in mind as you're trying to hone in on your photography skills, thinking a lot of times we focus, like I don't take John's picture, focusing on him because he's so beautiful. But I want to be thinking about what's behind him, like do I have a clean background or something that's not going to be distracting. Did you say do I have my lens cap on? Great interior photos of a lens cap, but thinking a lot about also, like sometimes, you know, the tendency to take a photo straight on, but think sometimes maybe about a profile. And there's things about convention of film about an upward angle sort of represents sort of a dominant figure, and downward looking means a submissive figure. Not always, but think about playing with some different angles as you try to shoot subjects, whether it's people, certainly willing to sort of, I just gotta take pictures of like trash in the snow or just odd things that you find out, details like the texture of grits. So sometimes it's just playing with like some small detail that you can pull out of the whole context of everything that's out there that might look interesting isolated in a photo. Are you game for this?
Before you step out, I just want to make a slightly unrelated plug. This week's video, which Alan produced, there's a little bit of the usual nonsense with Alan and I and the two great techie guys, but actually, by far, the majority of the video is Nancy White. Anyone who knows Nancy White, she's a very accomplished facilitator, thinker, organizer. But one of the things she's especially gifted at is using drawing to do what's called graphic facilitation, or just to amplify ideas or to communicate things. And so Alan, over Christmas, visited Nancy and recorded audio. So the video is in many ways just a rather whimsical, slightly psychedelic excuse to use this interview he did with Nancy. And I really recommend it. It's longer than normal, but most of it is Nancy just sharing her views. And it's really, I love the video. It's really illuminating. And Nancy White's something special. It's a shame she couldn't be here in person. But it's a video that was made just for us. And this seminar, and I really hope people will check the video out.
And there's an activity that she recommended called the
it's called Draw Together, but it's kind of a group activity, but the first stage of it is some of the things that she teaches when she does her drawing workshop. She does this whole thing about, I can't draw, so she makes everybody write that on the board, and then we end up drawing. So, there's sort of this foundation for people who do this, that you can do a lot with five basic shapes. So it's a circle, it's a star, which you put a little head on a big person, it's a rectangle, spiral, and something else that I can't remember. But there's, and so one of the things that's in this assignment that I threw into this week is like, the way they do it is like, try to represent a project or a challenge or something you're working on, just these five shapes. And so they do it as a sketch first, and then in a workshop, generally you share it with someone else and you get some feedback, but in this case, put it on your blog, try to get some people to comment or tweet it out or ask us to look at it. And then redo it, think about what could you change by perhaps changing the arrangement, maybe emphasizing the sizes or adding more of the elements or using color. But try to think about it as an iterative process. And you get away from this whole thing about, you know, I'm the first one to say, my drawings suck. I mean, I can barely do good stick figures. But it's not the point about drawing realistically, like those old, you can draw Sparky, those old comic things. We're not going to art school here. So it's about using these simple symbols to try to represent perhaps more complex ideas. All right. Does anybody not have a camera who wants to borrow one? Because I brought an extra.
Where are you wanting us to upload the photos to?
That image pool thing that we used last week.
Maybe
right now.
Yeah, imagepool.truebox.ca.
So yeah, all one word, imagepool.truebox.ca. And is what's the password for that? If they get prompted?
That one has no password.
No password. Okay. Oh, by the way, so we had a couple people, if you have your blog on the TrueBox server, sometimes there's some funkiness when you go from the image collector to the other one. If you go to the home page of TrueBox.ca, Alan has installed a magic button that will clear any existing login so you can start fresh here too. So yeah, sometimes people were finding they go to the image collector and they go to their own blog and they couldn't log into it because it was remembering their secret blog. It's complex. if you're being told you can't log into your blog and you're not sure why, this magic button may be what you need. Or you can just email us and we'll send it to you.
So where do you think there's the wonder?
I don't know. Outside. Does anybody want to leave their stuff here? Or do we just want to carry it? Does everyone like enough to carry it with them? In which case, we probably won't reconvene here. But hopefully you'll join us for at least part of the walk. Don't disappear all of you.